Welcome back to Automate Office Work. I'm your host, Justin Terman, and today I have a fantastic guest joining me, Quentin Pelletier, a legal ops consultant and self-described surgeon of legal ops, who is just 1 month into his own consulting journey after years working in-house at major companies, including Red Bull. In this conversation, Quentin and I cover a lot of ground. How to find your niche as a consultant. Why the best place to start with automation is the boring stuff you already have in front of you. And how tools like Microsoft Office can solve 90% of your problems before you ever touch AI. We also get into the people-first philosophy behind legal ops. Why curiosity and asking the right questions matter far more than having all the answers. This podcast is available on all the major platforms, live every Friday on LinkedIn, and then available on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. No matter where you're getting this content, could I ask you to tickle the algorithm and like, subscribe, comment, and share to help us grow and help more people? It's greatly appreciated. Just search for Automate Office Work or go to automateofficework.com, and there's a podcast section showing you our 80-plus episodes and links to all the platforms. Now back to the episode. All right. Welcome, everyone. I'm here with my guest, Quentin. We met earlier to go over, and I found the conversation with him to be very enlightening, and we've prepared some issues and some questions that we will go over. Quentin, would you like to introduce yourself further?
Yes, sure. Thanks, Justin, for the invite first. We exchanged a bit on LinkedIn when we thought, okay, it could make sense to have a call together to talk about a few topics. And since we have like kind of same approach, then it ended up, like I said, in this podcast. So just so that your people get to know me, I used to be an attorney in the past. So I was working in tax law. Then I worked for a few years in data privacy and IT law. And then I moved on to legal operations. So I was global legal operations for 3 years at Red Bull. And now I'm starting my own company on consultancy. And I would call myself more like now a legal ops architect. So meaning implementing some systems and building some resilient systems. But I guess this is a topic that we'll also tackle a bit in the next few minutes. So yeah, this is my profile, more a system guy that is seeing how to, not necessarily to automate, but at least to see what are the patterns that you can see in a workflow. And to my main focus is to improve these workflows and how it works.
Wow, such an interesting story. You sound like the exact kind of person that should be listening to my podcast. This is my target audience, a person like yourself who has gained substantial expertise, and then you go further, you go into automation. How do I do this at like super speed? How do I use technology? And I want to get to know you. How did you get this kind of mindset? And how did you, you know, so many people are in the jobs actually doing the thing. And then they're wondering, how do I switch this to technology? So that's interesting.
I would say that I'm a kind of lazy, productive person. So I don't like, and I also have maybe some attention deficits. So it means that when I have to do something more than 3, 4, 5 times, I start to see patterns and I'm just thinking, why should I do this if it's not, if I need to repeat the same thing over and over again? So that's what brought me to the this kind of legal innovation field. I think it's quite various, this legal innovation, but I was lucky enough, even when I was intern in the law firm, to push a bit the topics back in the days that were about legal design and also a bit of technology. Beginning of legal tech in, let's say, 2016, 18 was, and I arrived in my law firm on 2018. So it was really like beginning, and I was kind of lucky to get some less lectures on these topics, and it really clicked in my head, because like I said, like I have this system view, meaning that I can get bored quite fast. So if I see something that is repetitive, then I will just think, okay, why should I still do it? And then on the other side, I had this opportunity to get some lectures and being like getting some information quite early. Even if, again, it was the time where if you did a chatbot, you had almost no automation. It was more like decision trees that you needed to think about. But to me, this really made sense. And it started actually with one chatbot. One of my projects that I worked a bit on was with the tax return in France. They switched the system, and the idea was to create a chatbot. I did it on Facebook actually, to help the French tax contributors on this topic. So this is how it came, and I guess there are some what they call now soft skills that are curiosity and just being this definition or archetype of lazy productive. And I guess this is like from the profiles I saw, especially in the tech world, people are really some lazy productive, like way more than I am, but they just think, why would I do something multiple times if I can build a function in the code or something? This is really like they immediately see what is the interest of bypassing some manual elements sometimes and just think, okay, if a machine or something can do it, why would I do it myself? I can focus on something else. So this is really about this mindset, or I came to it naturally, I would say, to answer your question, due to this environment, I would say.
And you had an environment that allowed you to do this. Like when I think of law firms, I think of not innovation because you bill by your time, right?
Yes, I was intern back then, so it helped a bit.
And I'm also a lawyer, but I have my experience was in-house. So the incentives were different. It was here's how much we're paying you. We don't care how much time it takes. We're not going to give you any extra money. You don't have extra systems and budgets, and we're going to double your workload every year. So I was drowning in work. I had to go to technology, and I was motivated to do it.
Maybe I was lucky enough to get also quite early that if I wanted to do everything by myself, I was just drowned, like you described. And I have to say I was always very efficient, luckily, because it's in my DNA, I would say somehow. But I guess I never had the trouble to have way too much work, and I had also the opportunity to take the lead on these topics because this was starting to be kind of trendy topic. And there was this opportunity also in the law firms where I was to be this kind of contact for legal innovation and so on. So even if it was not bringing money directly, like I said, I was either young lawyer or intern, so it doesn't cost that much, but it's bringing also potential ideas to the partners. So I would say I saw the open door that just started to enter into it and kind of never left. And yeah, it led me actually to the legal operations. But I think I was super lucky also to get some partners that understood what is the underlying topic. Because I remember back in the days, was 6 or 8 years ago, we started to automate the corporate housekeeping, for instance, for the companies that we were working for, which was maybe only in the US so far, or in very big firms or companies. And when you start to understand that there are some patterns, even if you can do it with Excel and Word, actually, but when you start to get it and to deep dive and stop thinking about I'm doing only tailored work, but starting to like automize. Now, and just to be clear, I don't mean that everything can be automated, sorry, but there is this mindset also. You need to also to it leads to the business model. Do I want to do tailor-made only, or do I want to automate and do more volume? And these are questions that law firms never ask themselves. And this is where the problem starts to come. Like, if you don't define the problem, how can you find a solution?
I thought of this exact subject when I was working in-house. I gave the example to myself of like, are we like a really fancy restaurant that gives whoever you're working for, the customer or the salesperson, are we going to give them this fancy meal that is exactly unique and customized to exactly what they want? Because that's a lot of work. That is so much work. Or are we going to take the model of being McDonald's, where we just increase the volume and you get it going very fast. And so I often saw like the sales would come to us with a deal, and legal would start working on it. And legal would take like 2, maybe 6 months to help them with their deal, right? And I thought, why are we doing this? Why don't we just make the deals go super fast? Like, yes, it's all going to look the same. It might not be as big, but we'll make so much more money in volume. But yeah, you do have to think, which one are we doing?
Yeah, and I would say, unfortunately for you, you had this kind of a disease that is not very spread in the legal world, that is the business approach. Because I still see it like a lot of people don't pretend to be close to the business and so on, but without thinking about the person they are dealing with. I mean, like you said, legal is a like support function. It's a cost center, so you need to also try to have empathy, and empathy means that you need to consider that if you were in the same situation as the person, you would behave, you would feel the same. So it doesn't definitely make sense that sales are a bit pissed when legal takes 2 months to check something that should take 2 days or even 2 hours sometimes. And this is really like when you start to have this business approach, and I mean that's mirroring from your question before, when you start to have this business approach, then you find the means to satisfy your business. And it often leads to to this kind of automation topics, also starting to be to see, okay, do I really need some tailor-made or fancy restaurant all the time? Maybe sometimes this franchise is also okay, and this means that besides the business needs, it means for the lawyer to understand what is the risk that I give. It's like a risk-based approach. There are some deals, of course, they are big risks, so you do fancy, and there are some elements that are low risk, then you do franchise, and this is like the arbitration guide.
Yeah, I also want to say it wasn't necessarily the problem with the legal department adding the complexity. Often it was the salespeople. You know, they're motivated, they just want to go make a deal. So if a customer doesn't really want to buy what they're selling, they make up more that they can sell, right? They add more things. They add extra kinds of discounts. They would say, like I worked in medical device, so we were selling to doctors and hospitals, and so they would start adding discounts, like based on the number of surgeries that the customer does, we will give them a discount. And it became so complex. And you know, me as the lawyer, I'm writing this up in a contract. I have to understand, like, how do I write this? Right? I have to make this in a way that other people can read it. But you're describing like chaos to me. So I would write, like, yeah, based on the number of surgeries per month, and like they would sign it, and that's all great. And then I ask finally, wait, who's counting the surgeries? Oh, nobody. Then how are we? And I would ask finance. Okay, finance, you're the one sending the bills, and you have to like calculate these discounts, right? And they're like, yeah. Are you able to do that? No, not at all. So then I turned to sales. Okay, we are trying to support you in making money. You're getting this thing signed, but then you're not actually getting the money. Like, this isn't helping.
No, definitely. I feel the point. I mean, it's also like teamwork, whether we talk about sales, we talk about legal or whoever. This is being in the business means also understand them, but also frame them. And yeah, just teamwork, basically. This is the standout answer, I would say. But it is true when you work with people, you need to see what is the practical impact and talk together just to make the things running easier, I would say.
I think from that example, also, it shows that you have to have a mindset where you look outside what you're doing. Somebody has to look around and see what are we all doing together, right? If you only stay in the legal space, you're in a little box. You only see your piece.
Definitely. I can only agree to that.
Huh. We decided to, that we were going to have the main subject of talking today being automation versus hype. Right? And
Correct.
so and I've got my first question here. When you worked inside legal ops, you would often hear vendors say AI will transform your legal department. And what was your reaction to hearing this? Or it could be somebody else saying this as well. Does AI transform the legal department?
I would
Or is it
say
someone else?
very quickly in terms of answer, this is almost never like a technology problem. This is almost always a people problem and how to define the problem you're solving. AI can transform the legal department, would already be a bit better. But AI is just a tool. And again, what is the problem you're trying to solve? Sometimes you don't need AI, sometimes you need AI. And it's starting by the problem. And there is a French physicist that always says, yeah, if you cannot define properly a problem, everything you will propose as a solution will only be a random choice. It won't be a solution. So if I don't have the problem, I don't define it properly, I bypass already 50% of the solution. And this is where I would say, if you have vagueness there, it creates more blurry space, more gray space, and this is where vendors go. And honestly, sometimes I can understand. But if I hear AI will transform the legal department, I would say, I don't mind if it will transform or not. First, it doesn't mean that it will transform in good or in bad, but I don't really mind. I just want to know if my problem has a real solution.
Beautiful. I had an AI vendor come on and I talked with them. It was what the AI vendors wish customers knew. And they said exactly this problem. Customers don't know their problems. They said they expect us to know their problem. We don't. All we have is what we're selling, and we can't even have a conversation with the customer to make sure that it actually solves their problem because they don't know their problem. So they think their problem is we just need to buy AI. That's not a problem.
That's not a problem, yeah. And that's the actually the problem with the hype. And maybe that's where you can maybe tell us what you mean by hype, actually. What would you describe as hype in the legal technology field?
Wow. So hype. It's like this irrational excitement. They don't even know what they're talking about. Like they use the word AI, they don't even know what AI is. It's just at this point, it's a marketing term that now just means technology. And they got all excited, and at a conference, they'll ask, everybody raise your hand if you use AI. And I wonder, what does that even mean? I have been using AI since like 2010. It's in every single product. It's in image recognition, facial recognition, text prediction for the next word when I'm using WhatsApp. Like, what do we mean? So it's just become irrational excitement. They cannot define what they mean. Like you said, they can't define the problem that they're trying to solve.
Yeah, I have a feeling like a hype at the moment for the legal department could be if you say Claude MCP and then you just have a new hype. But probably in 2 weeks, I mean, we are recording end of May, so probably in 2 weeks it will be the new GPT Codex and so on. So yeah, I really get your definition.
What is the most overhyped technology that you've personally seen a legal team waste significant budget on in the last 3 years?
AI is too young, I would say, so I will kick it out, but that would be easy answer. I would say, honestly, from what I heard, I didn't implement one personally, but it's CLM. I guess CLM is really on every lips that I can hear. Yeah, we need a CLM, we need a CLM. And it's often coming actually from the legal department, but it's first, according to me, it's not necessarily a legal tool. And second, most of the people decide to go for the CLM, like just because they heard their neighbors going for a CLM without again asking, do I really need that?
Can
And
you
it's
define
very,
CLM for people who don't know this?
it's the contract lifecycle management acronym. So it means that how do you manage the full life cycle of the contract? So from the drafting to the negotiation to the signing and post signing obligations. So for instance, if you have a renewal date, if you want to stop the contract, resiliate it. So this is really from creation to the dev and post dev of the contract. The tool is managing or is supposed to manage all these stages. So this is really something actually very powerful. Tools that are really that can be really powerful. But it's not like a project where you should say, okay, let's implement a CLM for fun and not thinking about the global architecture. Because then you, with the CLM, with the contract lifecycle management, you enter to the core of the business if you do it properly. And it means that you need to see all these connections. And I would say overall, the technology is not bad, but if the implementation is rushed, then that would be a nightmare, like data migration, training of the users, and then at the end you would just get a tool that has very low user adoption rate, which is obviously not the target. So the long story short, yes, contract lifecycle management was really like everywhere, but a lot of budget was lost due to lack of preparation, especially not due to the technology, due to the lack of preparation.
Yeah, I agree so much with this answer, and I've seen it myself as well. That ultimately, what people want out of this kind of a system is they want their contracts to be organized in one place so they can find them. A CLM doesn't actually get you directly to there. It's like it engineers every single step of anything, and you need to be able to mirror that to what the business actually does. Otherwise, you're asking every single person to change their behavior, and people don't like changing their behavior. So often I would see businesses would buy these systems, people would not set it up, they wouldn't change their behavior. Maybe even there was no standard way of doing things, right? This is bringing like a cookie cutter approach to everything. Maybe that doesn't fit your culture. And I guess the quickest example I can give of you don't need this system, you need organized contracts, and you can organize your contracts in many different ways that are much less expensive and easier. One example that I saw was that a company, they just hired like a contract secretary, and they told everybody in the business, whenever you get any contract signed, email it to this email address, contracts@company.com, and the secretary will file it. It was so much cheaper. And you see, you only changed one step of anything.
It doesn't need to be such big change sometimes, and there is also this gap to I want if I like if I'm there and if I want to go there, maybe sometimes there is like on my nose there is an intermediary step, and you don't need to go from like my chest to the top of my head. You can have like intermediary step, and this is really where you go. Maybe afterwards, like in this example you mentioned, they could say, okay, the contract secretary has now like enough work, or she started to structure the database. Maybe we could move forward with a tool. And you don't always need to jump the steps. It can be from, yeah, it can be step by step. And I have a feeling that this, especially in the CLM or any other topic, there are some like these hypes that are coming. We just need to do that, but there are some alternative solution. Did you maybe see some patterns actually in this like hype trend, say a lot of AI in the that is very trendy? Do you see like how it's spreading, I would say, in the legal world? Did you see any pattern there?
I think a lot of times it comes from the top. The people that are in charge of budgets and they get to make decisions, they see what their friends are buying. And maybe some other CEO just buys some AI tool And then the CEO comes to, let's say, an operations person or an innovation person, and the CEO just says, we need to buy this AI tool. So the person who's in charge of innovation needs to be able to say back, why? What is the problem that we're solving? And if the CEO can't describe that, then no, that it's not solving a problem. Solutions solve problems. We need to have the problem identified first. And I would often see like this decision maker, they would push back and say, well, I don't know what problem it solved. And then the solutions person says, okay, what problem did it solve for your friend's company? And often what I hear them say, they say, well, now they can say they are AI powered. So it's not even a solution. It's more like a marketing thing. It's so we can tell everybody, all our customers, we are AI powered. So you're AI powered without actually doing anything. So
So,
yeah, a lot of this hype is just marketing. And we have to be able to, we have to be able to use our brains and push back on that.
and yeah, just define, like you said, correctly the problem, because I also saw it in the past. Yeah, my friend used that tool that could make sense, and then how you're spreading the word. So sometimes it's good for like a mass market discovery, but that should not prevent from the proper project management methodology, I would say.
Often they will still follow up. Can you make an appointment so we can have a demo with this tool? And you still have to be able to say no, because once you get into that demo, you have no way of evaluating that product. You have no way to ask questions because you have no problem to solve. So you'll see some shiny thing that impresses you and you just want to buy it just so you can have it. That's not the way to innovate or use technology.
On Automate Office Work, we talk a lot about a hard truth. You cannot solve a problem you haven't actually defined. Too many people run out and buy shiny new software or a trendy AI tool before they even know what's broken. They're just treating surface-level symptoms. But when you deeply understand your root problem, you automatically define what success looks like, and the right solution practically chooses itself. There is so much nuance to this that we just can't fit it all into a weekly podcast. That's why I built an online learning platform, Automate Office Work Academy, and created the course, Start with the Problem. This is a comprehensive 10-hour masterclass designed to turn you into a master problem solver. We skip the generic AI hype and dive into what actually matters: the art of observation, root cause analysis, hypothesis testing, and stakeholder perspectives. Plus, you'll complete a capstone project where you apply these frameworks directly to a real problem in your current job. Right now, I'm looking for a select group of founding students. The course is completely free for the first 100 people who sign up. All I ask in return is your honest feedback so I can make it even better. Don't just chase solutions. Learn how to diagnose the problem. Go to automateofficework.com/academy right now to claim your free spot before they're gone. That's automateofficework.com/academy. And now let's get back to the show.
All right, so is generative AI, things like ChatGPT, Claude, Copilot, is it hype in a legal context or is it genuinely useful right now?
To me, it's really genuinely useful. This is it could have been a hype, but it's like a tool, so it really depends how you use the tool. If you talk about, I think what is really important is not the tool, is the use you make of it. It's very I'd say I take the easy way, but it's never been more true, because I mean ChatGPT, Claude can do really good job if you give them the right context, the right grid of analysis. But it's exactly like a human. So if you give the right content, it was proved that for a few tasks, AI and generative AI is like doing better than the human. So for like maybe summarizing some documents, also to for the grammar mistakes, because even in French, for instance, I didn't precise it, but I'm French, and it's very tricky, the grammar sometimes. Then you can give the input in the AI. So that's definitely super useful, actually. The question is like, where do I keep the human in the loop, I would say. Because it can be, the tool can be really useful, but doesn't mean that it's doing everything. The question is thinking in terms of workflow, where can this tool be useful? Because it is useful. People, let's say, like GenAI cannot help me in my job. Just present them to me and then we'll talk a bit, because I would be extremely surprised that nobody could have no use of AI. I mean, even people from the industry, they're like super good use cases and so on. But yeah, definitely, like the tool is real, but the question is, how do you use it? How do you integrate it in your workflow? And it's the same for any other topic. So either if we talk about ChatGPT, Claude, Copilot, Harvey, Legora, or Harvey can be very destructive if you don't use them properly. But the problem is not the tool itself, because some people can implement it well and have good results. So it's like paranoid, the layer 7 issue. It's like the human is broken. So this is really a useful tool, depending on which hands you put it.
My wife was looking up places for us to stay when we went on vacation in Barcelona, and she wanted to use one of these generative AI tools, and she asked it, "Give me a list of the best places to stay in Barcelona." And she gave it different criteria, like she wanted it to be like our own apartment, she wanted a swimming pool, she wanted it to be close to different landmarks, these kinds of things. It gave her back a list of these 10 places that just sounded absolutely beautiful, and there were links to go see them on different websites. She clicked on the links, every single link, it was fake. It didn't exist. And she was shocked. She's like, "How can it lie to me? How can this be the smartest thing and yet it's just lying to me?" And so I told her a better way, instead of asking directly for answers, because that's when you turn off your mind. It's the end of thinking. You ask it, "Give me the answer." And you're not able to critique it. Like, imagine my wife couldn't click on the links. Imagine that we just had to show up in 6 months. That would be devastating, right? To see, like, oh, it's completely not true. But I told her the better way to use this is to use it as like a brainstorming kind of a tool, to ask it, what are the possibilities? What are the things that I should consider? Maybe it would give, like I tell people, ask it how to get to the answer. Don't just ask for the answer. Because once you know the how, now you have a process and you can repeat it and you can make it better. So yeah, that's how I use AI really shortly.
I definitely agree. This is, I mean, you cannot expect giving a wrong context and obtaining the right solution. If you go to your intern, I mean, we still consider most of the AIs as intern, but they can do way more than an intern. But if I'm a senior lawyer and I go to my intern and say, "Yeah, find 10 places in Barcelona," say, "Yeah, okay, but what should I do?" Which there's a methodology behind. You start to explain them. It's like for the legal reasoning. So you would explain, yeah, what are you searching, how you would search it. Back in the days with Google, you would also search for your places of interest and so on. So like you said, all this methodology behind is super important. And this is why AI is useful depending on how you use it. If you give, again, the right context and right methodology, you would really overtake a lot of people. But if you give the wrong context with the wrong methodology, then of course you cannot get anything of it. But it's the same if you use like a hammer to, I don't know, to just do gardening. Yeah, you won't be very productive. But if you use it on the right way, or if you use the right tool for gardening, then you would of course be more successful.
I gave this example with a previous guest. It was you have a hammer, and your problem is that you have a bunch of rats in the building. There are actually several ways that you can use that hammer. You can go around and hit the rats, or you can like take some wood and you can, cover the holes going into the building. There's different ways. What does it look like when a legal team buys technology for the wrong reasons?
I think you already gave quite precise answer before. What happens is that it's creating more chaos than it should be, and it's not solving a problem. So then I think the most important is also not the, like, I would say, the tech issue or like the financial impact, even if it's important. What is the impact is that is on the mind of the people, mindset of the people, because lawyers are really adverse to the risk or to the failure. It's like in the DNA when on during the training. So it's to keep it short, it's getting super chaotic and then makes people more reluctant to evolution in the future. So you should really, I mean, what I tried to do also in the past was really to bring a tool when it was either coming directly from the teams. So they were, when there was a request, we're proposing, saying, oh, now you can do this kind of thing, or you complain a few times, I heard about this thing, maybe there is a solution for that. So either it was coming from the team, or it was something where we proposed because we got a few feedback from external of legal people. But at the end, if you buy legal tech for the wrong reason, you will more demotivate the team rather than giving, as you expected, the power to go further and really like learn and really enjoy even more their work. But yeah, I think there is like actually one part that is quite often, not to say always, bypass is like the evaluation of the new tool. It's like, what question would you, I mean, maybe that's a question for you actually. What if you're like evaluating a new tool, what would you like ask to the people, to the vendors, or maybe more precisely, what people all often forget to ask when they are evaluating a tool? Because there is the part that is very straight, but there is also the things that are missing, and that are the probably the most or the trickiest.
So that's exactly what I would ask, is what is your tool missing that we need to provide ourselves? Like, we need to set it up. We need to have historic data to train the tool on. I also think about the people that are going to be using this tool. Like I'm in a position just to buy and provide the tool, but to me there are two different types of ways to provide tools. There's a horizontal where I go through every single step of what the person does and make sure that each piece is being solved and that they can do it. A different type of tool that we do is where we just buy a vertical tool that can be used in many different situations, but it's only going to solve one step. So a great example of this is when you have people cooking in a restaurant, you can go with them through a single recipe and make sure that they have all the tools, everything is in the right place, they have the recipes and whatever. That's a great way to help people. It also takes a lot of time, because you have to go through every single recipe of anything that they do. But when you do it, when you get like 20 steps, now they can very easily do what they're doing and it's improved. The other way that I see purchasing teams do this, they buy an oven, or no, let's call it a microwave. And they say, here you go, kitchen. We just bought you this amazing microwave that is going to cook everything so fast, and the flavor is amazing. And the cooks are left wondering, how am I going to use a microwave? We don't microwave anything here. Everything is cooked in an oven or in a pan. The microwave sounds amazing, but I have no idea how I'm actually going to use it. So I do see this. You see which way is actually quicker. Buying the microwave is so easy, and I just send an email to the company. Here you go, everybody. And everybody's left wondering, what are we supposed to do with this? So that is the wrong way to buy AI. You just buy this AI platform and you send an email. It doesn't have as high of an impact. It's easy for you to put on a quarterly report and you get promoted.
Actually, I have a feeling it's also bringing this question of like, how do I manage the vendors? Like, because like Am I supposed to know like all the people, all the solutions that exist on the market, which would be like kind of vendor relationship management, like okay, how to know what they are planning on their roadmap, what to do, also because it's kind of the job of the vendor relationship manager to know what are the upcoming new features, how we could and maybe not directly actually how we could implement it in the systems that are into the company, but there is also this strong need to get to know all the solutions and like but there are also a lot of people that are saying, like we said before, shiny solutions without really thinking about how do I drive the transformation into the department and have feeling here that's
I think this is where you have to start evaluating your innovation team. Are they actually driving innovation or are they just purchasing managers? And so often I see like these AI gurus that hop from company to company to company. I never actually saw them actually transform the legal department or the company. All they do is they come in and say, we need to buy this AI tool. They buy it, and then a couple years later, they just leave. And they go to the next company where they do the same.
which somehow is not, I mean, the end of what you describe is a problem, but most of the things are not a problem. You just need to be clear on the intention. If it's someone that is supposed to explore the market and so on, this is okay. But then if you also expect to having someone that knows how it can be implemented in practice and so on, this is really a problem because between being like evangelist, AI evangelist or product evangelist and being product implementer somehow, there is a big gap. And if you're not clear on the intention from my perspective, then cannot lead to the right situation. If you expect someone to say, yeah, how do we implement it, to select the tool and implement it, it's very different than saying, okay, just explore the market and leave us with like consulting note where saying what is possible and so on without really linking it to the real needs of the business. And both situations are okay, you just need to be clear on the expectations from my perspective.
And I think it takes a different mindset of a person.
Yeah, definitely. It's a very different approach.
Can you actually envision the future and innovate, or are you just looking around and buying whatever is presented to you? It's completely different. From an ops standpoint, what are the telltale signs that an automation project is going to fail even before it launches?
And first, if there is no need, this is really the. But besides that, I think this is like also the need for having in legal ops, you always say people, process, tech. So automation should be the last wheel of or last part of the fault on the project. But I really believe that it's like the leadership giving the direction. Because if you don't have the support of the sponsorship into the automation, it will not work at some point, especially because again, you have these people first, and what is really difficult most of the time is to change the habits, and automation is changing the habits. Like meaning, oh, I used to send this email to my let's take the example you said before with the contract secretary. Like if the sales used to send to one email address and it was entered manually by the secretary. Now you say, oh, instead of having that, I have like a tool that is dealing with that automatically. I know I have to upload the file directly on the platform, whatever platform. Then this is a change. And if basically you have a new process and people don't respect it, if the sponsor is not saying, I don't mind at all. Anybody that will send an email will never be answered, and that will slow down the business. Then you are almost sure that at some point this process automation will work. Despite if you start to give exceptions and possibilities to like take like other ways to go to the same point, then it will automatically fail. And I guess this is not only limited to automation, but this is very one of the biggest risk. And also the other like risk to go to a fail would be automate something that doesn't bring enough of ROI, basically. If people don't see the interest and it's taking more time, it may seem a bit trivial, but if something takes more time with the automation rather than without the automation, that's perfect recipe for the fail, actually.
And then the opposite, what does good look like?
Towards project management. This is really like project management, and I see a lot of legal operations, a lot of lawyers nowadays trying to initiate some projects without understanding the big picture. I mean, all the time I was starting in the past with charter of statements, like what do I want to achieve? How do I want to achieve it? Who is supporting me? Why do we do this? How we plan to do it? Who is involved in the project? What is the budget? These are all these things that don't guarantee the success. And this would be a lie to say, yeah, just because you're doing a good project management methodology, sorry, that you will succeed, but it's really limiting the risk. And it also helps at some point, especially because I was giving a workshop actually on project management a few weeks ago. And instead of going into all the fundamentals of project management, because it was targeting people with 3 to 5 years of experience, so they already knew like the foundations of project management, but we focused on the friction of a project. And this is where, when everything runs fine, you have basically no trouble. But by defining properly, like what are all with this charter of statement, all these elements, then it helps at some point to limit the risk of failing, because we could say, okay, this the intention was this one. If we change it, then it means that we need to reconsider. But it really helps to keep
Wow.
a clear guideline, I would say.
I thought about this question myself, like what is the easiest way to decrease the chance of failure? And I thought in my mind, you redefine success. So if success means that 100% of people have to change their behavior, you're likely going to fail because one person not changing their behavior means the entire thing failed. So redefine success. Define success to mean we're going to improve. We're going to make a little bit of improvement. It's going to become a little bit better. And if you can do that, hey.
No, I agree. It also depends on what you expect and so on. Like expectation management is also a big topic, but it's true not only for the people, but also for the project itself. Like if you ask AI document review to get like everything without involving the human, then okay, you have very high expectations, but like, yeah, will you succeed? Probably not. But it's always like this risk-based approach. And I heard a few times about this example I was giving between the chest and the top of the head before. It's like you cannot expect to like jump all the steps at the same time. It can work from time to time, but it's also like step by step. If you like have very reluctant a team that is very reluctant to tech, and you say, okay, tomorrow we become AI native law firm. Like, yeah, they would be like, yeah, just what's wrong? And in that case, you need to be conscious that you need to change your team probably. But if you want to keep the same team, you need to go step by step and say, okay, what would be a first success? Exactly what you define. What would be a first success for this team? I want to bring them to this AI native law firm for sure. But how do I bring them step by step? Like, okay, maybe first is like using ChatGPT and starting to do like we said before, grammar check, spell check. Like maybe start to summarize some document, pre-draft some answers to some emails, and then I could go maybe a bit further, summarizing legal documents, and then keep going, going, going. In that case, yeah, depending on how you define the success and what you want to achieve with milestones, you definitely lower the risks.
It sounds to me like you're building a culture.
And yes, definitely, you need to build this culture. Because I mean, you need, depending on your target, but I would say it really, if you want to build like solid and strong team, whether you are in legal department or law firm, you need to have this same view. And actually, that's why when I was mentoring the sponsor before, I really believe that the sponsor should have like big vision, not like something irrealistic, but something that is bringing the team together. And if people don't feel aligned, then they should also leave, or maybe the sponsor should try to convince the people, but they should have clear guidelines, because it's only in these gray zones that you create confusion. And if you are clear on what is the intention and you say, okay, I want to build a culture of innovation, then you should also support the fails, for instance. If I want culture of perfection, then okay, but then it would probably mean no innovation. And this is okay, because by definition, an innovation can be or is failure. Like, there are probably millions of startups or whatever that are like in a graveyard now, but they tried. So it means that, but we always quote the one that succeeded. There are not only successes, but also these fails helped probably other companies to succeed, and this is how it goes. So this, like
You
with
have to
culture, you're
redefine
right.
failure. Failure has to become learning.
Or you don't have failure, but it's really like you said, building this culture, determining what is the culture. And yeah, if you want to go for like innovation, then like you said, exactly, failure should not be like a mistake. There's a learning.
So I'm also hearing that you need to involve everybody in the organization. It can't just be one person buys a tool, but everybody has to be empowered to be able to try new things, change things, see if they work better. I also don't see a lot of people being creative. Like we like to think that AI is going to unleash and make everybody smarter. Everybody's going to become an Einstein or a Tesla. And I just don't see it. In my own personal life, I see like only about 1% of the population is actually innovative and creative and dreaming about inventing new things.
Yeah, but being innovative doesn't mean that you need to create the new Tesla or Google or whatever. Sometimes just like innovative could be just change the way it's done so that it makes more sense for the people. And maybe innovative could be that if I want to go to the swimming pool, I mean, maybe very, very basic and even not that innovative, but could think in terms of innovation in my schedule. Instead of going by car, I just go by foot because it's only 25 minutes and I'm doing a bit of sport in the meantime. So it's just finding a solution to a problem that was like painful. And at the end, it's not only at the end, it's not even innovation all the time. It's just finding a problem to a solution at the end. And like you said, there are a lot of people that are not that innovative in that sense, but they are like also most of the people that want to get easier at work, I guess. And if you tell them, or if you bring the topic as, oh, this will be helpful for you, and if they see what is in it for them, then you can be pretty sure they will find a solution. Like there are, of course, exceptions. There are people who don't want to change at all, and so on. But I rarely heard, no, I don't mind. I just want to keep doing the shit that is annoying me, like for 20 hours a week. I never heard now. Like almost never heard anybody telling me, no, I'm happy, I want to keep that way. Now, if you bring them a solution that is helping them in the right way, then you will trigger interest and then that will move forward.
I'm hearing your story. I'm hearing that you were this type of person and you were given an environment where you were allowed to do this. It wasn't against the motivations of your manager and the people in the company. They allowed you to do this. They gave you the tools, the resources. They were building the culture.
But I mean, maybe I will be a bit negative there, let's say. It's a trigger for between us, but I believe in a situation it's very easy to say, but you have four options, and I was teaching that to my students. If you're not happy with the situation, you can complain. I mean, I'm French, I could say I will complain, but this is like a solution I rarely accept or barely temporarily. But then you can either accept, improve, or quit the situation. Then, when I'm not happy in a situation, I mean, first I try to improve it. And then I see, okay, it's not working because, for instance, the innovation culture or like my managers would not give me the opportunity to explore a bit. I would try to improve, talk, and blah, blah, blah. Then if I cannot improve, I just need to decide, do I accept it or do I leave it? And there are, like, I left already three companies. There were some reasons because I didn't want to keep going that direction. I tried to improve all the time. I didn't want to accept the situations I was in. So I guess there is also this, like, more personal approach on the people. Somehow I was lucky to have these managers, I would say. But also somehow when it didn't fit, and it was the case for the three of the jobs I left at the end, I just decided to leave because if you don't feel aligned with also this direction that is taken, then need to be responsible, but not complaining. And if people accept the situation, I think this is also okay. Just need to be clear on what you expect and just be responsible. And I guess this is the same thing on the project management side. Like, you need to see how do you respond to the targets that are given and how you want to bring and build your future.
If you've made it this far, you're probably getting benefit from what I have to share. You might even be thinking about sharing this with colleagues or having a conversation with your team. If you're feeling generous and would like to give back to support me in my efforts, you can do so at buymeacoffee.com/automateoffice. Donations can be one-time or recurring in any amount that you would like, and show me that you appreciate the content I provide. I'd like to invite you to connect with me. You can find me on LinkedIn, Justin Turman, T-U-R-M-A-N, lawyer, coder, and linguist, currently living in Amsterdam. You can also send me an email at justin@automateofficework.com or go to automateofficework.com and book a call with me. I'd like to hear from you. Do you have suggestions for future shows? Perhaps you want to come on as a guest and talk about where you are in the automation journey. I offer consulting services.
Yeah, I really liked, like, you have like a story arc that goes over this whole thing. You're saying we need customers that have this mindset and are in an environment where they can do these things. And I said, that's exactly you. You had this mindset. You went through this. You had a company that was willing to invest in you and allowed you to explore and to fail. So how can we connect these things and how do you, okay, I'm expecting then that you are taking these exact skills that you have and sharing them with other companies to get them to improve and go forward.
Yes, that's definitely the idea of like what I'd learned also from the past in consultancy, but also in law firms and also in bigger companies or enterprise, to also bring what I learned to the next clients. And I think really the most important that is not to keep the mind closed, but also to still be open, so keep in the learning. And I see like all the time with new client, there are always new things to learn. And it's not about coming with like already prefixed ideas, but it's more like, okay, I have a situation. And I guess since also we talk a bit about AI today and so on, and this is like all these personal skills that make the difference. I mean, we're also talking off about it before, but all these things that make us very like unique is also what helps. And so for me, it would be this capacity of like creating some or detecting what are the issues in the systems. This is really something where I'm really good at. And maybe people would more hire you for your skills, your technical skills for you, for instance, in office. So I guess this is really like out of everything we said, what is super important is like to find the person that is aligned with the expectations and so on, and where you feel the connection. And all these skills, you need to ask the right question to identify this right person. And that would be the almost like the last word. It's like getting the right question helps way more than getting the right answer, because there is no right answer, but they are like right questions, I would say.
This is what I'm seeing with technology now. We've had Google for decades. We all have AI that will give us the answer. So the differentiator between people now, it's not knowledge, it's curiosity. It's the ability to ask the right question. So this is the skill that we need to grow inside of people.
No, definitely. I can only agree. And how you, because the knowledge, like you said, is like accessible to almost everybody. It's how you use it, basically. Because in the past, you could see a lawyer that was hiding the information. And now what is super valuable is this experience, and not only the knowledge that you have, because everybody can read like an article of law, or like can read the documentation of a tool or whatever. But it's like, then the other skills, like how do you use this knowledge to get to the point, is really the key point to me.
Yeah. All right. So how can people connect with you?
How can people connect with me? Yeah. Yes. I mean, first, I'm quite active on LinkedIn, so they can feel free to reach out to me directly. And I also have my website that I started recently, so we didn't talk that much about it. But it's my new character is Dr. Ops, so the surgeon of Legal Ops. And the website is quentinpeltier.com. And like I have a small surprise also for your people that are listening to the podcast or having a look at it, is that there is like a full diagnostic on where to start as legal operations when you have like a few questions to determine what could be the diagnostic and like potential solutions with recommendations. Of course, afterwards you can book a call with me, but it's absolutely not mandatory. This is first like a tool that people can use to do like first research on their legal ops maturity. And yeah, these are the two main ways to contact me. And yeah, I guess we'll have a few others in the future, probably a newsletter or a podcast, but I guess we have time to manage that.
I want to be on your podcast.
You will definitely be on the list. Just need to take the time to do it.
Quentin Peltier. For the listeners who don't speak French, that is spelled Quentin Peltier.
Did yes, I get that? And in French, you would say Quentin Peltier. But I won't be offended like I
Quentin.
Told you. I won't. Yeah, because otherwise it would end up in Quentin Peltier. And in Germany, where I live, it's Quentin Peltier. And when I said Peltier, the post lady said, hey, Peltier? No, Peltier? And I say, yeah, I mean, if you want to, that will be my name in Germany. I will get used to that. So, yeah, so if people want to reach out, they can reach out to Quentin Peltier, Quentin Peltier, Quentin Peltier, whatever you want, .com, and then they can reach out to me differently.
Well, it's been wonderful having you. Thank you so much for coming. I give you the floor. Any last thing that you want to say, especially if we want to close this out, back in regards to automation versus hype. I heard from you that there is some hype somewhere, but there's also a lot of good that we can get out of this as well. The tools are there. It's mostly now how people are using the tools. So it's not necessarily that there's a deficiency in the tools. It's you need to be getting the skills in able to use the tools, as well as I also heard that there is a people component to this. The tool is not necessarily the answer either. It's getting your people ready for it as well.
Definitely. And I think people is the most important. LegalOps, you talk about people, process, technology. This is our PPT, our PowerPoint. And yeah, it's always in this order, like people, process, and tech. And I would say out of everything we discussed today, of course, there is a hype around automation, about generative AI, and so on. But these are only tools. And what is really important is the outcome. It's what you're searching. What is the benefit of what you're doing? And I guess like this year, the motto of the CLOC, so the Consortium for Legal Operations, for corporate legal operations, is getting stronger by design. And this resonated a lot with me because actually the design is the conception. And like, how do you conceive like what is the concept? How do you build the things? And like one of the outcomes that I got was first, if you from everything we talked about today, I guess we need to design for clarity, knowing what we want to have, design for human ego, and design also for failure and iteration, because no system would be perfect. It's fitting at a specific time, and then you need to be able to iterate to learn if there is a mistake, if there are like scope change, evolution for the future. And according to me, this is how you build resilient systems and how you get stronger by design, because all these design elements should help you to become stronger in whatever you want to achieve. So this would be my last words. Let's say cut the fat and build resilient systems.
Beautiful. Then we'll leave it at that. And thank you so much, everybody.
Thanks, Justin. Bye.